It's my pleasure to welcome back to Classical Austin, Daniel Ching.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me on. It's nice to hear your voice. Nice to talk to somebody that I've known for such a long time, especially during these uncertain times. You've been well?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Daniel. As well as can be expected, and I'm so happy to still get to connect with folks through music on KMFA and such. A real blessing. But this is about you, and I'm not sure that I've had a chance to chat with you on your own, so I'm really interested to learn about your early days. Where did you grow up, and what first drew you to music? Was there someone in your family who was musical, etc.? And what was the first piece of music that you remember hearing, and what was it about the piece that captured your imagination?
Yeah, I guess we've never really had a chance to talk about each of us in the quartet individually. So, yeah, where should I begin? My father's actually a violinist. He still is. He's still playing and teaching in the Bay Area in California, where I grew up. So, naturally, he was my first violin teacher. He started me when I was 3 and a half.
Wow.
And, I think he really had an idea that he wanted his son from the beginning to be a violinist. I always joke when we do our quartet shows for young children, I tell the story of one of my first baby pictures. It's really true. One of my first baby pictures is of me in the hospital bed, and my dad had brought along what I'm sure he hoped to be my first violin, and there I was in the crib lying there with the my future violin next to me, and we were literally the same size. So when I was 3 and a half, I think it was like a 1/16 size violin or something like that. When I was 3 and a half, I think I finally grew into that violin. And he wanted to be a violin teacher. He was playing in the Bay Area and the Oakland Symphony and other kind of freelancing things. But he'd always wanted to teach. So he basically, I was his first guinea pig. So at 3 and a half, I started. Looking back, I was very lucky because he was a very dedicated father. He sat with me. Besides our lessons, he would sit with me for a couple hours a day to make sure I practiced correctly and make sure I did practice. And so from an early age, I don't really remember any days that I didn't know how to play the violin. It's been with me since my early days. And it was about when I was about 10 years old, was when I first learned about string quartets. I remember digging around in his LP collection, if those of us that remember LPs. He had a bunch of LPs, and he had some that he had not even opened, and one of them was the complete set of Bartok string quartets by the Juilliard Quartet, performed by the Juilliard Quartet. It was an early recording from the late 40s, early 50s, and I put it on, and I was instantly mesmerized by the sound. I couldn't believe that four string instruments could sound like that. So I was hooked pretty early on, you know, to string quartets through kind of an odd repertoire. It wasn't like I heard the Beethoven or Mozart quartets and immediately got into it. It was really the Bartok quartets that did it for me.
So cool. Well, why classical music, Daniel, specifically? And did you have a favorite composer or a favorite piece of music?
So as I mentioned, my father was a classical musician, so I was drawn to classical music for that very reason. But I was very interested in all kinds of things, not just string playing or violin playing. I became hooked on a lot of orchestral music. I became kind of a score nerd, and you know, maybe it had some idea that maybe I'd be a conductor. I actually explored some conducting during my undergraduate years, but in my early days, during my elementary and junior high days, I would, you know, fall in love with a Mozart symphony or something like that, and I'd get the score and I'd take a look, I'd bang it out on the piano, and so I was kind of your typical music nerd. Even in the early days of computer generated music, I would take scores of chamber music and put in every part. It's funny now because I see my son. My older son is kind of doing the same thing. Of course, he has a lot more technology to work with than I did, but I remember I would record every single voice on a computer. You know, the computer could only do one voice at a time, and I record it on the cassette player, and I play it back while I played another voice coming from the computer, and I'd layer it on top with cassettes, mind you. There was no digital editing or anything like that. And I would put an entire sextet or octet together using a computer. But that was my way. I realize that now. That was my way of really learning the scores to all these pieces and come in handy. You know, it's like, oh yeah, when we're playing something, a lot of it comes back to me in that way. I said, oh, I remember when I was studying this part and seeing how the composer puts a piece together, just because I became so intimate with the score, putting in a note at a time, learning all the rhythms and the dynamics and layering and all of this kind of thing. So I spent a lot of my early days nerding out, as you would say, with classical music.
Well, I think you know, Daniel, I would never say that in any case. Did you set out to build one of the world's greatest string quartets, or did you work together for a particular concert and realize, hey, we got something here? And did you ever have a desire to be a solo artist exclusively?
Well, looping back to what we were talking about earlier about my time discovering string quartets through Bartok, when I went to Oberlin for my undergraduate studies, my father had always had this idea that I would play the violin, practice the violin, and become a soloist, but I had no interest in that. I knew that was a very difficult proposition to do. You know, there were so many great young violinists at the time. I mean, there still are. And also just my musical interest wasn't necessarily in performing that music. I like listening to other music. I like hearing soloists play that music, but string quartets was really where my passion was. So when I entered into Oberlin, right from the beginning, I was pretty much on the hunt for three others that would kind of share my passion. I didn't necessarily think that I would start a quartet that would be professional, but I wanted to at least spend those 4 years playing with as many great young musicians that would also share that passion and studying all that music alongside with me. So I think I joke, and it's maybe not so much a joke, but I did play in probably 10 to 15 different string quartets.
Whoa.
You know, in just 8 semesters as an undergrad, and each one hoping that it would be one that would continue on for more than just a half year or a year. And it was actually after I graduated from Oberlin, I stayed there and took a gap year before I started my next degree. And it was there where it was during that year that a colleague of mine in the violin studio I was studying in, she knew of some incoming string players who were coming in, and she suggested that we put a quartet together. She knew that they played well, and she wanted to have a good experience in chair music, and so she put this quartet together. I said, sure, why not? And that quartet became the nucleus for the Muro Quartet. And I always make this kind of analogy that it's kind of like trying to have a baby. When you try too hard, sometimes it doesn't work. And when you relax and don't try, I don't know if that's a good analogy, but that's how I like to think of it. It's basically the quartet I didn't try to really put together that actually ended up working.
So cool. The original group had a somewhat different lineup. Could you take us through the evolution, if you would?
Yeah, so going back to that story, the lady who put us together, she's now a violinist in the Philadelphia Orchestra. I've actually been in touch with her more recently because of this whole lockdown, so we've been catching up a lot in the last few weeks. She knew of this violist that I mentioned. Kathy came in, and Josh was a cellist already at Oberlin. He was going to be a sophomore. And so she put us together, and within the first month, she realizes that the three of us that she had recruited to play in the string quartet was much more serious about playing string quartets than she was. She wanted a good experience, but she was looking for, you know, we all had to satisfy our chamber music requirements, and she was just looking for a good experience for satisfying that. And the three of us wanted to rehearse 6, 7, 8 hours a day, and she realized that this is not what she... I was about to say sign up for, but she didn't. This is not what she signed us up for. And to this day, she jokes about being kicked out of the group. She ended up realizing that it was best for the group for her to leave because she realized that the three of us were much more serious about it. So this group, so another violinist came in, Jennifer Choi. She's now a freelancer living in New York.